Dear listeners, I'm Lauren Conlon, and before you embark on this investigative journey with me, I want to offer a sincere word of my acknowledgement and gratitude. When I, as the host, first set out on this path, I was admittedly very green. I lacked the seasoned expertise and finesse that comes with experience in investigative podcasting and reporting. However, every story has a beginning and an ending, and this podcast represents the start of my own investigative odyssey. So as you dive into these episodes, you may notice rough edges or moments where my inexperience shines through, but please know that every stumble and misstep has been a crucial part of my learning process, and I've embraced each challenge as an opportunity for growth and improvement. So I want to express my heartfelt appreciation to each and every one of you who has stuck with the story despite my imperfections, because Grant's story is important. So your support and patience have been invaluable as I've navigated the complexities of investigative podcasting. And your feedback, whether constructive criticism, words of encouragement, or maybe something that wasn't so nice, has helped me and helped shape this podcast into what it is today. So without further ado, here is Corruption: What Happened to Grant Solomon.
Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermès, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Welcome to Corruption: What Happened to Grant Solomon? I'm your host, Lauren Conlon, and I've got a very intense episode for everyone today featuring someone who doesn't do many interviews at all. And I briefly introduced his name to people on season one, the November 15th episode titled Abuse Within the Walls of Faith. And that's the Covenant Presbyterian whistleblower, Austin Davis. And that's no relation to last week's guest, Dr. Byron Davis, who was amazing, and I will definitely have to have him back on. But I mentioned back in November, Austin's situation is so sensitive due to a number of things, one of them being the incredibly tragic Covenant school shooting in March of 2023. And if you recall the shooter, Audrey Hale, part of her manifesto was leaked back in November of 2023. And the people at the Covenant school and the parents of the victims, oh my gosh, they were so upset. And I do not blame them at all. But this sparked a very sensitive side conversation by Candace Owens, actually, and the Daily Wire, for one, that the shooter, Audrey Hale, was potentially abused. And if the church and the school knew about it and possibly addressed it,
would things be different? And I mean, no one really knows, of course, nobody except for God. But interestingly enough, Channel 5 put out this article on February 19th, 2024. It said, quote, "The lessons learned in the Covenant School mass shooting may help prevent future such tragedies. We still don't know if the killer's writings and potential motivations will ever be made public. That will be decided in court this spring. But before then, Metro Nashville Police now plan to share details of what happened in a specially arranged seminar. The timing of this presentation raises some questions, specifically, what will be shared when so much of the Covenant shooting case file remains tied up in litigation that won't be resolved until April? It was March 27th of last year when a single armed suspect went to Nashville's Covenant School, killing 3 children and 3 adults. Metro Police responded to the scene, taking out the shooter. The quick response likely prevented a greater loss of lives. But nearly a year later, questions remain about what happened. Details of the investigation have not been made public, but that could be about to change for law enforcement. News Channel 5's legal analyst Nick Leonardo says, "The ad makes it clear that potentially there's going to be specific information on the Covenant shooting and how it may have been prevented. Later this month, Metro Police will offer a presentation on the Covenant shooting through the U.S. Department of Justice for only sworn officers. This will provide an overview, review, and factors that may have contributed to the violence and share lessons on prevention. Could this include details from the shooter's writings now tied up in court?" End quote. And unfortunately, there was an update made to this article on February 20th, 2024, the very next day, and it says, quote, "Update. We learned late this afternoon that the U.S. Department of Justice has canceled the seminar to be held by Metro Police for law enforcement. We do not know the reason why." End quote. That is very curious, but I'm honestly not surprised. I'm really not. I'm disappointed, but not surprised. And Austin Davis, he knew of Audrey Hale. Just as a side note, his daughter had classes with her, and they were about a year apart in school. So let's pivot to the victim, victim one, Jennifer Doe, and the entire reason that Austin became this whistleblower. So Austin Davis, former parishioner at Covenant Presbyterian, he filed a lawsuit against the church for not reporting alleged abuser John Perry. And as a reminder, John Perry is an author. He co-wrote Mike Huckabee's book and worked with some other very high-profile politicians. And look, I've heard court recordings where John Perry is identified as this abuser. And I've relinked the BuzzFeed news story, and this abuse was substantiated by the state police in Tennessee. Now, according to court transcripts and various news articles like the BuzzFeed article, Jennifer Doe, or victim one, or the minor, did share that she was allegedly being abused by John Perry to Austin Davis and his wife. But again, you can also do your own research. You can go to law.justia.com or even The Silent Bell. And I also mentioned on the November 15th episode that the timelines of the minor that was abused, the victim here, and Audrey Hale, they did seemingly cross paths at the school. So what has been said about Audrey and what Candace Owens said and what the people, I guess, quote unquote, people are speculating that the rest of the manifesto says that was not leaked, and even the recent Channel 5 article is hinting it, is that Audrey Hale was possibly abused, and this is why she did what she did. And hear me out, she did the most unspeakable, horrific thing a person could ever do. She murdered innocent children. And if I were a parent of one of those children who was killed, I don't give a flying crap about what happened to Audrey Hale because I can no longer hold my baby. So, and that would all be because of her evil, murderous actions. So I don't care what happened to her. I would have blinders on and I wouldn't be able to see past anything. I really wouldn't. But other parents at the Covenant School, they do have a right to know if something was potentially covered up, because what if there are others? What if there are formerly allegedly abused kids that are having horrible issues because no one did anything to help them? What if? This just goes back to, what if she was helped, Audrey Hale was helped, would this have happened? We don't know. Nobody knows except for God. But this is where Austin comes in. Now, Austin even tells me that because of his past with this school and the church, when the shooting occurred, they actually looked at him first before they knew it was Audrey Hale. They looked at him. And oh my gosh, I was just so incredibly devastated for him. And just as a side note, everything I just went over was incredibly hard to verbalize and write out. So I just want to apologize. I hope I didn't offend anybody or trigger anybody by discussing this. But back to Austin Davis. Literally since he spoke out in the early 2000s, he has been tortured. And as of late, by the Tennessee judicial system. And this is all for wanting to protect kids from sexual abuse and hold the church accountable. And around the time that Austin filed this lawsuit, John Perry resigned from his position at the church. He was an officer. His wife divorced him. And this is not all a coincidence, but being the whistleblower in a case with some pretty powerful people is not easy. So I should share with you that in 2019, Jennifer Doe, aka the minor, the victim, did sue Austin Davis for defamation and invasion of privacy. And the lawsuit, just a part of it, says that the plaintiff, who is now an adult, filed this action against Austin Davis seeking compensation and punitive damages for intentional invasion of privacy and defamation. The plaintiff also sought to enjoin Mr. Davis from further intrusion into her private life by posting to social media statements regarding her childhood sexual molestation, as well as the private details of her life and childhood. I will leave that there, but just speculating here, I can imagine that a victim of sexual assault, or a survivor in this case, I should say, maybe this person does want to move on with their life and they just want to heal, move past what happened to them, which I completely understand. Everybody handles their trauma differently and they are absolutely entitled to that. I do think that Austin's intentions are to save other children and hold the church and the school accountable here. I really and truly believe that, and it's just a horrible, horrible situation. But let's take note here. Austin, because of this, has been thrown in jail. I mean, he spent every penny he has trying to fight this and clear his name, which has been completely dragged. And when you hear our interview, I'm speaking to Austin from the hospital. Unfortunately, he filed a new motion February 12th, and we can get into that, or he'll get into that in the interview, but he took a very bad fall outside, poor guy. And legally, he can't get into all the details of what he's been through, but I had been bugging him for an interview just to share what he could of his story, and he finally agreed, and he's just such a nice, sweet, genuine man. He genuinely cares. And I think that digging and sharing stories like this, indirectly connected to Grant and Gracie, and you'll hear more during our interview about how he knows Grant and Gracie and Angie, I think it's important to share what he has to say. not only to make more noise of alleged corruption in Tennessee, but I do truly believe it gets us one step closer in trying to connect certain dots about Grant and how some of these churches are intertwined. So you can go to thesilentbell.org, which is linked out in the episode notes. And please also keep in mind, this is Austin's account. You can always do your own research, come to your own conclusions. And I'll say, me personally, I just think he's so passionate, and I do admire the fact that he cares so much and he hasn't given up after all these years. And he also mentions the blog Jane Speaks Up. This was a blog that I briefly mentioned in season one. I've linked that out as well. That's another case of Tennessee corruption and a church cover-up that, again, you might find interesting. And the last thing I want to say about Austin before I play our interview is there are some similarities to his story, like Angie's, because people are trying to paint him out to be mentally unstable. He's not. He's passionate. And he is somewhat of a hermit now. He doesn't really speak to a lot of people because he's been so beaten down. But he just minds his business. He lives his life, and he has a lot of info, a lot of names. And this is Austin Davis' story.
Austin Davis, I know that you are joining me from a hospital bed, so I really, really appreciate you, and I hope you're feeling okay.
I am. Thank you, Lauren, for having me on and with playing this. But on Monday, after I filed the intervening motion in the Covenant School open records case, I had a event after that later in the evening when I tried to go home. And anyway, I ended up in the hospital. So I'm well taken care of and trying to heal now.
I can only imagine. And now I briefly reminded people before starting this interview, just who you were, what your story was, and how you do have a connection to Grant and Gracie. So I just want to go back really quickly. I mean, this nightmare started for you in what?
For me, it started in 2002.
Okay.
At Covenant. I was a church officer in the church. I actually designed the Covenant School seal.
Oh.
And my daughter was in the inaugural year in 2001, with Audrey Hale, who was in kindergarten, and she was the mass shooter in that case. And so my case goes back on that all the way and involved the police and things in 2008. And then in 2013, when we finally started learning things about what all was, a lot of the things are being covered up. My family filed a lawsuit. And we were in court down in the Davidson County courts and the family county courts where they put my case when we filed it. And we were in court. And what I didn't know at the time, and WSMV-TV was actually got a court order where they could bring a camera, and they actually brought a camera into our court hearing to record the case, which is highly unusual. They don't normally go into civil courts.
Right.
But they came into ours, and at the same time, I don't know if it was on the same day or not, but it was extremely close to it over on another court. There are like two courts there. And in the other court, Angie was over there in her divorce case with a former WSMTV anchor person.
Yes.
And so
All
of us were down there in June of 2013 in court. And yet Angie and I didn't know about each other at that point in time. It wouldn't be till 2021 on July the 4th when I happened to be reading a website called Jane Speaks Up. And she was telling great detail about what was going on in her case. It was over at Fellowship Bible Church in Brentwood, where a three-year-old boy had been raped in the bathroom during church service.
Yeah.
Shocking. And Jane Speaks Up was a second mother that had and they had filed a suit, but it was all kind of kept up. You know, nobody's reported on it, but I found out about it from hers and went down there and confirmed it at the courts. But she was writing on her website about, and I just got my ruling in the criminal court. So we'd gone through a lot of suits, and then we were rolling these over. They had charged me criminally on some things to just totally demonize and destroy me. But I was just sitting there, and the other ruling had come down, and everybody was extremely depressed in my family, and we were, you know, destroyed. And then all of a sudden, Jane speaks up, posted on the 4th of July, posted a blog article, and she hadn't spoken in about 2 years. And when she posted up, she talked about an attorney named Larry Crane, who had filed a $3 million defamation lawsuit against me in the cases I was in. And then it was also over suing Shannon Ashley of the Medium writer that had written an article about Grace.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And on behalf of Grace Chapel. And so all of a sudden you started seeing these the people that are, you know, speaking out about things, and then the lawyers and people that are, you know, suing people and trying to, you know, protect the churches and all that kind of stuff. So that's where I became aware of the WSMV connection and Aaron Solomon, Angie Solomon, and Grant's case. And when I read it, you know, when I read through it, it was just so, you know, I'm so embroiled in the other case, and there were several other cases that are connected, mm-hmm. you know, had these connections in my case, and then here was another one.
Yeah.
And I'm reading it and looking at it, and I'm just, this is just unbelievable. And I really didn't know what to believe, because I'm coming at it totally, I like facts.
Yeah.
I gotta know. I don't like to say something until I'm damn sure it's a fact, you know? And mm-hmm. so I was probably very skeptical as I looked at it, because it just seemed kind of unbelievable. And you look at the pictures and just look and you go, okay, well, I mean, and so I had to go out and like get my car and get up on a hill and try to start seeing what that was like and if it was possible.
Oh, the parking lot, right.
Yeah, and so anyway, so on July the 20th, 16 days later, they were having a 1 year balloon of release and a service at the cemetery with a lot of the kids that go to school,
mm-hmm.
probably 100 kids over there, and all these kids, you know, kids know they're the scariest people in the world, because they can kind of, they have truth detectors with adults locked. I know when they're getting BS'd or whatever, and so they still have a thing to them that adults can become jaded about. But I went out there, and all these, you know, 18, 19 year old kids were there, and Angie and Gracie were there. And before I got to where it was, I was visiting a plot of somebody that was in my family and in my family relative world. And mm-hmm. I'd actually done a graveside service where I'd actually let it out there. And so I went back to stand there for a while. And then I saw some cars pull up, and these women got out. Must have been about 8 of them. And so I was really nervous about going to the service.
Mm-hmm.
I had a blazer and khakis. I was trying to dress nicely to go to it. And I didn't know them. I'm a complete stranger. I felt kind of crazy going over there. But I knew that I had information that was going to connect some dots.
Yeah.
And so I went over there and walked up to the lady, and I said, ladies, my name is Austin Davis. I think I might be able to help you. And they just completely embraced me the moment I walked over there.
Yeah.
Which was unusual for me, because I've not been embraced anywhere. And all I get is hate and threats and all the other kinds of stuff for so many years. And so it was kind of a shock to me to have any women be nice to me. And so they took me down to the ceremony, and that was my birthday. So I think I was turning 66, and it was Grant's anniversary, 1 year anniversary of his death. And that hit me pretty hard. He was a baseball player. I played baseball, got hurt in Ole Miss when I was trying to play there, got hit in the eye and had a bad eye injury. Mm-hmm. Lots of things I could kind of relate when I thought back to being his age.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how you're looking at your life and your future, and then just to have it taken from you, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And so anyway, I went down there, and then they were asking me questions and talking, and I think among them it was spreading, you know, quickly that somebody showed up and had something. And then they introduced me to Melanie, who had gone to Ole Miss where I went, and we had some common connections through Memphis, where she went to high school and where I went to high school.
Melanie
and,
Hicks, right.
Just, she and I immediately hit it off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We stood next to each other at that little service, and they, people were speaking, and I was standing across from Angie and Gracie while I was going on. Never met them. Mm-hmm. And they were, you know, looking over at me, and I'm the stranger there. And then as soon as it was over, Melanie said, would you come back to our house and have pizza with us and sit down and talk to us?
Yeah.
So we all went back over there, and then I left there, I think it was about 8 a.m. in the morning. And we'd stayed all night talking about the cases and then putting a lot of the connections.
Yeah.
And I knew a lot more about the political connections up above that I'd already run into. And I knew what they were headed into and what they might be battling. And I don't think they were quite aware of it at that time, what was happening with them. But I was able to see the field better.
Yeah. And
so anyway, that began. And then, and so from that point on, I started researching and doing my own validation of facts and things.
Mm-hmm.
And I put out one of my links that I put out on the Silent Bell. I have a website called www.thesilentbell.org. And when I put that out, I put a link out there. At first, I was saying alleged, and everybody was calling it a mysterious death and things like that. But after I really went through it, and I have a thing called 7 minutes in Gallatin that I did.
Yes.
And it's hard to read because it's a lot of detail and pictures. Mm-hmm. It's like a library of documentation, but I went through and broke through that, you know, detail by detail, minute by minute, trying to go through with what I had, what I could hear, and what I knew, and it became very. It was hard to start seeing what I could see and how it was going down, but I called it a murder when I put it out, and that's from Grant's perspective. He's under that car. His body's speaking. His head's in a certain position, different from the side of the car that's being shown to a grieving mother a couple of days later. There, okay. It's a completely different scene, and he's speaking from under there. He's speaking to me as I looked at it.
Wow.
The Bible talks about how the blood cries out to the Lord from the ground, and Shelby Foote was my mentor in Memphis. He's a writer and historian, and we used to talk, and he would go to the battle scenes and walk the ground. So I'd gone out to the scene with Melanie and walked all over that ground.
Right.
And really looked at it. And so I'm just saying it was really speaking to me. And so I told Mel, I said, it's a murder. Now who did it? That's to be investigated. Which nobody seems to want to do. They say they've investigated, but they've investigated a traffic accident. And they,
yes.
To me, didn't seem to do a very good job. Yeah, we have a murder. There's a murder.
I want to just say, just to cover our tracks here, potential, alleged. Yes, and that is your opinion, and that is definitely the opinion of a lot of people here. Obviously.
Well, I'm not worried about it. I've already been sued by Larry Crane, and he can come back and sue me again.
Well,
and
I was going to
say. I mean,
yeah, you've been, and I recognize that, and I want to point that out. Like, you have gone bankrupt because of this. And when I mentioned 2015, I'm sorry, I guess I should have clarified, that was the year they first threw you in jail. Is that correct?
Yeah, that was when I was arrested and thrown in jail, yeah.
Yes, and I want to just.
I was arrested in church. I was arrested at Covenant in a church service.
I mean, it's just, it's crazy. And I just want to put this out there. Like, this is you speaking out to protect children from sexual abuse in the church and in the school. This, and for whatever reason, they have, you know, done this to you for. I just, it's mind blowing. It's mind blowing. This stemmed from you trying to protect children. Now, sorry, continue.
It is. And it's, Yeah, I've coached forever. I've coached kids. I'm hard on them when I coach them. I'm sorry. I get a little emotional at times about the kids. There's nothing, you know, some coaches have that line at the walker out there, and you're coaching kids, you're trying to get the best out of them. You want to demand something from them. I'm from the old school. You know, we didn't have participation awards and all that. I guess that's all kind of good on some level, but it's okay to fail. Mm. It's okay to get beat. I've been played on teams where we didn't win a game the whole year. Mm. I was a very competitive person. That made me more competitive because I hated losing. And so you can't soften up life for it. Everybody loses. Everybody wins at some point in time if they work hard. You know, it's just things. But even if you don't, you're still learning something. I thank God when I got injured and I was down on the ground in the snow and really, really hurt bad. And took a long time for the ambulance to get there. And I looked over and the first thing I said to God, I don't know why this has happened, but I thank you for it. And it's, you know, you learn from every experience. I wouldn't have done that when I was probably 18. Right. I would have probably been cussing a lot like I do still.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
I've learned over life that, like, there's good and bad, and there's good and bad people. There are people, there are good and bad institutions. There are people that do bad things, but then the institution might do good things and maybe doing something bad, too. So it's a mix of things, and that's why the founding fathers had checks and balances and things. They knew how rotten man was. So I am speaking out and using my First Amendment right, which has been under unbelievable attack. But yeah.
When did you start the Silent Bell exactly?
Well, I've had two sites that have been taken down by basically injunctions when I lost to Larry Crane, and he represents the child molester in the case that I'm involved with over at Covenant, and he represented Victim one. I can't say the name. I know what the rules are, and I'm abiding by them.
Okay.
But and so that's all kind of unusual in itself. But I went and took sites down, SoundCloud, and different court hearings. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that I had to bring down.
Yeah.
And then I went back and a lot of that was kind of, I don't know. I didn't know what I was doing. I was kind of sloppy in it. I can relate about what I was writing down. I just put it out. And so it wasn't organized like a newspaper or trying to put out a good verdict. I mean, a good image of something. And then when I came back with the Silent Bell, that was when I got a little more organized. I said, I got to be a little neater. I got to write stuff a little better than what I did. Because when you're in a barroom brawl, kind of like I feel like I've been in.
Yeah.
I have a temperament that's from sports and just competing, and there's just I was having people do things to almost agitate me because I'm under all kinds of harassment threats and
yeah.
I mean, like under law, like I can be arrested today. I'm still under the jurisdiction, and I have a number of letters written from different attorneys here in town, and they will come get me.
Ugh.
When I filed the other day, I was worried about being arrested while I was at the courthouse.
Yeah.
And when I got home, I was just glad to get home that I hadn't been arrested while I was in town.
Now, am
I in jail in silence again?
I read some of this motion, and am I allowed to say anything about that? Am I allowed to ask you?
Sure. I haven't put it out yet just because I've been in the hospital having surgery and different things. But I did get a phone call from Nick Breeze at Channel 5 the day after.
Yeah.
And then asking me about that motion. So I know they're aware of it. I know they know. And I know that the lawyers have all been sent copies of that. Now,
right.
We don't know whether the judge is going to deny it. We don't know what everybody's going to keep it buried in secret, mm-hmm. which is what they've done all along. But it shouldn't be. And
right.
then it goes back to the question about the kids. Had people reported
right.
on what's going on back then?
Yeah.
I think Grant would still be alive.
Oof.
So the media plays a big role in this because they're not doing their job. They're not reporting on any of the story. And when they have, when BuzzFeed did report something on it, and London Daily Mail and other people picked it up, they all put out false information that statute of limitations had expired. And that's a lie. It hadn't expired. And it's even at the federal level, it's under the Mann Act.
Right, so if with the minor.
Yeah, so they're lying and they cover it up and they keep doing that. And then everybody goes, it's expired, and they look at me like I'm a nut and say I'm mentally crazy. And they prosecuted me as a Sandy Hook shooter threat to the Covenant School. They hated me speaking out and writing emails every day and bothering everybody. But they don't respond to you. They completely ignore you, and I didn't like that.
Yeah.
So I kept speaking out because I was trying to protect kids from something happening. We had a molester in the church and in the community that wasn't being prosecuted, and he's living over in Belmead, and he's around families that are going to Innsworth and other schools. And I'm thinking, you know, the parents over there might want to know that they've got somebody like that in their neighborhood, but they're protected.
I'd want to know
more than Einstein than Epstein. They're protected more than Weinstein, and protected more than anybody. I think I was probably one of the first. I think I may be the only case in America that happened at that point in time. We couldn't find one anywhere that was even similar to mine.
Right.
There's some that happened since then. But so what happened was in 2008, when I got banned and blocked at the door of the church, going to church on June the 29th by a secret security unit up there. And they let my wife and children go in, but I wasn't allowed in. And they, you know, I had to get off the property because I was walking my car and told I could never speak to anybody at Covenant again. I could never go there ever again, rest
okay.
of my life.
Wow.
And I'm in school with these people, and I can't talk to them. If I talk to them, I'm under the harassment law, is what I was told, perpetually.
Okay.
But I couldn't talk to anybody. And so that really put a lot of restraint on me. It extended beyond the trespass. It was now extending where you're walking around, you got a cage around you. I had people I knew that come up and try to talk to me at school, I wouldn't talk to them because I was afraid if I talked to them, I was getting trapped and they would call the police and report me. The police come down and arrest me for harassing them.
Right, right.
And that's what they're trying to pass down in the legislature now. So, you know, you got somebody that's considered a threat. You go to a judge or whatever, and then they make them a threat. And I'm the perfect example. I'm the mentally ill threat. And at that time, there was a shooting in Virginia Tech. It just happened a few months before this that was happened. That was what the police said when they came. Now, Mr. Davis, we had the shooting in Virginia Tech. You know, like, you can't be too safe anymore. You can't talk to them. You can't go there. And that's what two detectives told me on the front porch of my house.
Okay.
On July the 2nd, 2008, when they actually sent the police to me. So now I'm under harassment law.
Right.
And that's going with me everywhere I'm going. That's perpetual. And they said it was for the rest of my life. And when I got arrested years later, it was all based on everything that happened back then. And I didn't even know if it would extend out that far because I've been back to the church since then when I got invited to a wedding and some other things and nothing was done to me. And it was all, and they didn't have the right to do it anyway because they didn't go and got approval from the session or the congregation or anybody. You can't just go do that. You can't just hijack a church because
right.
you're a couple of elders and you just decide to ban people. Everything about it was unlawfully done. But they did it, and it looked like it was good. And then the police and the courts and everybody just went right with it, even though I was telling them, you can't do this.
Right.
Because the point was, we have to destroy this guy.
Right.
And that's what they did. And then March 27th, 2023 happened, and there was no security up there. There'd been security for me up there, and I was arrested by a security guard who stopped me and wouldn't let me into the church. He's a Davidson County Sheriff's Sergeant. And then
specifically there for you.
Huh?
Specifically there for you. Okay. Yeah.
And my daughter going to record him, and he actually said my name. And I've gotten a call from a friend that went there, and they were kind of concerned. They said, God, they're actually saying your name, bro. So I was public enemy number one in the building, and everybody up there is like, what they're doing is they're going out and like telling everybody Austin Davis is going to come here and shoot the church up.
Oh, gosh.
Our kids were being told that in school.
Oh, wow.
And it was like the BP oil spill. It's just going everywhere, and they're totally letting that kind of information go out to demonize.
Right.
And to discredit me because I was over there saying that there was a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And so I got arrested in 2015 and went to 2017 a trial, got convicted, actually ended up going to jail for some time. And then got through my probation.
And what did you get convicted of, Austin? Sorry. What was the actual conviction?
Aggravated criminal trespass on behalf of the Covenant School and Covenant Presbyterian Church, and I was a danger and threat to children.
Oh, my gosh. That's so frustrating. Oh, my gosh.
And
you're a threat
to children.
Sorry, continue. Oh, my gosh. That's so frustrating.
We're trying to protect the children.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, the police department is up there. And if you know the recordings I sent you this morning, when you listen to those, and they're just excerpts. So when you listen, you'll hear me telling the police officer, y'all want to hear about the child sex abuse? I'm standing there in front of the building. If they come into service and pulled me out, and the media is on the police report, it says media is what reported me to the police.
Mm.
So they're violating all the First Amendment rights of going to church, being there, and sometimes the media is calling and saying, he's down there. I wasn't disturbing the church. I went to church. Nothing happened. I was at the very end of the service, and cops come down into the church service and stop me, and you can hear the music going. I'm sitting there singing, and they say, Mr. Davis, they take me outside. I'm telling them outside, and I'm being warned then. And then when I go back a few weeks later, because I'm beating on the door then,
mm-hmm.
That's not their house, that's God's house. And there's a place and point in time where you have to exert your right, and then somebody else is going to try to stop that. But in the end of the day, it'll all get shaken out.
I mean,
God works.
Yeah, and you were, you know, if you're banging on the door to a church, like, obviously, you're trying to prove your own point there, even though you know deep down in your heart, you know what's going to happen, you know, in that type of situation.
The cost that's going to be paid in doing that, and that's what Paul and everybody in the Bible, that's what they knew when they would have these. We got too many people now that are, like, telling us what to do, and they're losing that freedom. The freedom is dying and going away. It's already pretty much gone. From what I see, I mean, if anything were to be heard out of the day, it would be call your friends, send this over to them, let them listen, let them start looking, because it's like it was in 1773 or whenever it all started, and Patrick mm-hmm. Henry gave the speech, you know, we're in trouble, and there are forces that want to take our freedom away, try to hang on to our First Amendment rights, to be able to speak, to be able to go to church. I mean, you shut down churches and just order everybody they can, and everybody's complying and they're doing it. I mean, I understand it's a complicated thing, but once you lose your freedom, you don't get it back very easily. Tyrants don't give it back to you.
Yeah. Yeah. And there comes a point in time where, like, I can imagine, like, for you and, like, even for Angie, like, they've got this thing with you guys, like, oh, it's so easy. You're crazy. We're just going to gaslight you because you have truth. You have truthful information that you've brought forward, and you've been beat down for literally both of you for over a decade. Okay. So there comes a point when, you know, you're going to snap and it's going to, they're going to say, oh, look, they're going to point the fingers. Look how crazy. And I know you can't really get into this. What you brought forth at the church and at the school, that was extremely, extremely valid. There was victim testimony. There was, I mean, church minutes, you know, that were recorded with him essentially stepping. It's just, it's what you had was real. And it seemed to me.
So I've got two judicial letters, and one of them is written to the DA saying, and sends the information over. I love the judge for doing it. He sent it over. You know, I didn't have a good hearing in the case and all, but, you know, the judge at the end of the case, when it was over and he heard the testimony, he wrote a letter immediately to the DA and said, oh my God, the victims come in and testify to this, and they just put it over to them. But see, the DA is the brother-in-law of one of the staff members at the Covenant School. And so I'm being prosecuted by somebody who's got a family connection to the Covenant School. The police are tied to it. It's all tied in there. And then they're the ones that come up and stand in front of the building after everybody's shot and all. Hundreds of cops up there, and they're collecting all the evidence. They shouldn't be near any of this evidence. And now the manifesto and the journal and what's written. Yeah. You know, I mean, I put stuff in the brief. I don't know if you're able to see the exhibits yet. I don't know if that's gotten out. But you see in there, I'm referring to them. But basically, what I'm going to the court is, and it's 10 months after this thing's talked, I'm under duress. Mm-hmm. And I've watched everything, but when I heard in court on January the 29th, and I was watching the news, and I heard one of the attorneys say that there's an inconsistency in a document that is inconsistent with an attorney's statement that Audrey Hill died intestate and didn't have a will. And what this attorney's saying, there's a document there, and there's something inconsistent between these two statements. What that leads me to believe, without him saying it, is to speculate on, is it sounds like there may be a will in there. And so if she's written a will, and then the police are the ones that are deciding who gets to see whatever they get to see, and they're holding back the information. I want to know what's in the will. What did she say? She, right before the shooting, she was talking to a friend, and she was telling them, you'll understand better. I've left plenty of evidence behind.
But we'd never seen that evidence.
Heard some things. No, well, what's the evidence? So there's nothing that excuses or validates vengeance.
Right.
Vengeance belongs to the Lord. And so there's nothing that validates anything that happened. But we do need to understand in some of these cases, and especially in this one, if there's child sex abuse that went on, if there's something that happened to Audrey back when she's at school there. And I know enough that there's a deep concern that I have. And therefore, there shouldn't be all this secrecy. Let me get there and read the damn manifesto and the journals and see what she said. They're not going to do that, but I'm just saying. Huh. And so since there's silence and there's nobody talking about it, I'm stepping into the court. I'm giving the judge information she needs to know. And the attorneys that are in there, they know. And the problem is there's several attorneys on both sides there that aren't reporting what they do know. And there's nobody talking about it. And it's the elephant sitting in the dining room or in the living room. That's why I rushed in and said, I'm bringing this motion to the court. I think this is timely. I think that there's enough here now. This needs to be considered. And now that judge has to decide whether they're going to let me come in and have a place to stand. And I'll be doing that on one foot. I've always write stuff still standing, but now the Lord's got me on one foot. So
the next few months. But it's so tragic and it's so sad because you don't know what could have happened if they would have looked into this when you brought it to their attention, how many kids could have been saved? It has to do with Audrey Hill.
Well, I don't think the school might not have survived if it had come out what they had done. And I think that any school another connection, just look at what's happened at GCA. A lot of the people at GCA are connected to the people at the Covenant School. I send an email into them into the faculty at the Covenant School on March 17th, 10 days before the shooting. And I was providing them information about Brad Joya, who's the NBA headmaster that had testified against me in court. And when he did I found out there was another case in the Darlington School of Rome, Georgia, where he had been before, where now there are 20 known victims. There are 370 million dollar lawsuit over there because they were getting abused down there for years at the school, and it's a 40-year-old case. And so, if you read the bell and you look into the things, you'll see the connections. But when I found out about, oh my God, there was another case down there, and so these people are stepping in. It's kind of a spider web. They're trying to keep everything pressed down.
Yeah,
and it's all tied to that case. It's tied to Gracie and Grant Covenant School. It ties over Christ Press Academy. which is where Richard Anderson, who's the, was the high school principal over there, and then he was connected to people at Covenant, and he was connected to people at Christ Press. The new interim headmistress that's at Covenant now came from Christ Press. They're all moving around, and there's things going on. Now, I don't know if everybody in there knows every detail, because a couple weeks before Gracie did her YouTube video, I sent an email about the case of Covenant to Christ Press Academy, their staff, and to Grace Chapel, to the church staff.
Yep.
Crossed over the line. I touched because I knew that Governor Bill Lee was involved in both places, and that he had actually been a class pair with John Perry, the molester in the Southern Coast. So there's a connection. And I know these churches have connections anyway. It's, you know, they have mutual pastors, connections, friends, all that kind of stuff. So I sent it into both places. And then I got a cease and desist letter sent to me from Christ Pres behind that, because I think I touched the nerve at Grace Chapel. And then Gracie, 3 weeks later, steps up and speaks out. That I, you know, at the time, I'm not knowing it's going to happen, but everybody could have thought I knew about it.
Right,
and then
right.
He speaks out, and then all of a sudden, Larry Crane is sending out letters trying to block on that. And then later on, Melanie and them are getting letters from Todd McMurtry on behalf of Steve Bergen. Todd McMurtry is the lawyer. And so there's a whole lot of connections and people that I'm involved in and connected to.
And it's a pretty
extensive lot of years. I mean, this thing's gone over 20 years, and I have an angle on it, and so I'm just kind of trying to give you a little idea today. But people are going to have to. I mean, and I think more talking about it and getting more precise. Right now, we're just kind of generally talking about it. But
yes,
see, some media had reported, like WSM TV is owned by. They were owned by Meredith, and now they're owned by Gray TV. They know. I've sent them stuff. They're not reporting. They're not going to report. And I've got a cease and desist on me, basically, from them. And one of those attorneys was representing the Tennessean in the Covenant case. He's dropped out of the case, but the Tennessean's still in it. They're not reporting.
Local media is the worst in Tennessee when it comes to this stuff. And like, part of me is like, okay, you know, I understand if you have a family and you're getting threatened by certain people, you know, because I believe that these politicians, and you know, my opinion is that they do have a big hand in swaying the media and what they say. And like, just echoing what you said, I do want everyone who's listening right now, do your own research, go to the Silent Bell, look and see what Austin has been through and what he's done, and the accused abuser who, you know, you can't really mention. His kid was in the same class with Governor Lee's kid. So it's like almost the same thing. Allegedly, Governor Lee sat in the same row at church as Aaron Solomon. It's like they all seem to know each other, either directly or indirectly. And, you know, the truth as we know it gets buried. So it's incredibly frustrating.
I can mention the molester. His name is John Perry, and he's a prominent writer.
Right.
For
yes.
A lot of prominent people in the Christian realm. The molester's lawyer and victim are coming after me to silence me. It'd be like it could happen to them. The Covenant School, the parents are in this case. They could react in a certain way if they find this information out, and they could all come and attack me and go after me. And that may happen because I'm stepping into the arena with them, but I'm hoping. And what I do believe is I don't think all the parents at the Covenant School, there are 100 families, I think they're being represented. I don't think a lot of them know. I think if they've been told anything about me, I mean, they started having shooter drills, bad guy drills before this happened. Mm. And I know why they were having bad guy drills. It's because I'm public enemy number one.
Yeah.
And they had to do something, so they're over there doing that. I mean, I think that's pretty clear. I know the morning that it happened that, like, people were calling me. I was getting screenshots. I was getting told certain things. After it, I'd run into people. I go, I just want you to know, I didn't think you did it. You know, and they were, I can't even imagine what must have gone on in the city.
Oh, like people thought you were the shooter at first?
Well, sure. I mean, the moment, like any crime, what happens when there's a crime and you're trying to figure out who it is, you're going to start going, has anybody made a threat to the school?
Right.
I was a convicted Sandy Hook shooter. That a federal judge coming to court. He's an elder there, coming to court and testify. They had a meeting, and it concerned parents up there, and they were talking about the school and the church. The concerned parents came, and they were up there, and they were concerned about the Sandy Hook shooting and were making comparisons, and they said that I was capable of doing something like that, was what he said in the in my trial, my criminal trial.
Got it.
That's a powerful thing for a jury to hear from a federal judge.
Yes. Yes.
And so it got me convicted. I think there's some problems in people that were on the jury. I know there are problems in people on the secret grand jury, because the guy that was the security guard was on that grand jury session. The judge who turned me over to be indicted got arrested and went to federal prison for public corruption. I mean, it's all along the path. And I went to the I appealed. I went to the criminal appellate courts. Mm-hmm. Went through that and went to the Supreme Court, and everybody ruled against me.
Yeah.
And some, you know, everybody's talking about there being a two-tier system and all that. I mean, it is. It's corrupt. The witness you had, the guest you had on yesterday, Byron Davis, I think.
Yeah, Byron. Mm-hmm.
Byron?
Yeah, Byron
Davis.
He's
talking about a lot of the same kind of things, whatever he's doing. So there are a bunch of us. There's Jane Speaks Up. There's Angie and Gracie. There's me.
There's so many, Austin. I say that there's so many cases to look into, so many emails that I receive. But something that I just want to wrap everything up with here is just the fact that there are secrets, and this is not just Tennessee, but hello, this podcast is very much based on cases in Tennessee and churches. And it just seems like you said, all of these churches are connected somehow. They don't want their secrets exposed. And lastly, like you filing these motions in Tennessee and this judicial system in Tennessee, I hate to say it. I don't trust anything, obviously. And I don't think anything's going to happen because they're just going to keep continuing to paint you as this crazy person and throwing them out. But I guess at least you can say that you did it. And at least you can say that you have this paper trail, right?
No matter what the judge does down there, once people find out, these people they have some authority, but it can be limited. They can be taken out of office. They can be impeached. They can have things happen to them. There are not very many of them. And they have all this power. And then there's 6.5 million Tennesseans who have no idea what's going on in Tennessee.
Yeah.
Can you imagine what happens if they find out? Can you imagine if everybody listening to your show gets on their their email and sends a message to everybody they know and says, you need to listen to this, and to send to all the people you know, and what a fire would burn across the land if people started sharing the information.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I think it'll happen. I think it's going to happen by word of mouth and people. And I think that those people up on top really are underestimating the people.
Yeah. Times have changed.
We're in a different world now than we used to be in. And
yep. The internet is powerful.
But I think Almighty God is going to hold somebody accountable here. And he has his own plan. He's got Angie over there. She is unbelievable in her interview the other night. Strong.
Yeah.
That had to be hard. Breaks my heart every time I see her.
I know.
I just can't imagine. And so I love her, and I see her on there trying to stand and stand and stand. Gracie, I wanted to, when I said and wrote that 7 minutes and Gallatin said murder, Gracie said murder. She was the one that said it. And she's a little girl, and she got on there and she said, raped, murdered, killed. You know, and we can't hold back. We're going to have to be playing hardball and say the truth.
Yeah.
And then we need to spread it. So that's where we need the help. We need people to listen to your show, other people. We need it to spread. It's big. It's a massive, massive cover-up going down there. And the police, everybody's got the stuff, and we don't know what's in there. They're not letting it out. And the plan is, it's not coming out. They're not going to let it out.
I just got chills.
It may not be God's plan.
I did. I just got chills. And Austin, I really want to thank you for coming on the show and sharing everything that you did. And thank you for your advocacy and really everything. It definitely is appreciated. And just so you know, it doesn't go unnoticed.
Well, thank you for, I know God must have put it on your heart, because we've all been praying about whoever's used. And for you to come into their lives and be as committed as you've been to them, which I think is wonderful. And it's Grant's Army. And that's the name on it. And that's all of us inside of that over here. Everything in there, Grant stood up and tried to protect his little sister. So he gets that honor. So anyway, we're all marching forward. We need a big army with millions and millions of people joining it. So that's the call.
That is. And that is. And hopefully, you know, one day people will see the truth of what you have presented and everything that you stand for.
That was Austin Davis's story. And as I mentioned, I have a bunch of the links linked out in the episode notes so you can check that out and you can do some of your own research. But next week, we'll get back into Grant and Gracie, but I hope you can see and understand why all of these tragic stories are connected. Until next time.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.